So the interesting bit about like the and I assume like that all of the people here on this call are broadly familiar with like how the European Union works, right? Like how digital policy making or policy making in general in the European Union works, and what's on the digital policy agenda. As I wrote in this sort of like very brief expose that I sent to Sebastian, and that was then circulated, like we are currently around halfway through the mandate of the current European Commission, the von der Leyen Commission, so the European Commission formed after the last European European Parliament elections, that will be active and working through its work program until the next European election in 2024, which means like that we are essentially halfway through the European digital strategy and also the data strategy. And like one of the things that is interesting, and there's something like so what I've copied here, what you're looking at is the so-called mission letter for the Commissioner Breton, who's responsible for the for the digital, like broadly speaking, the digital agenda of the European Commission. And I've highlighted a sentence like in this mission letter is something that these commissioners all get from the president of the commission at the beginning of the thing, which basically outlines their work program. It tells them what they're responsible for. That's essentially like their work program. And one of the things that Breton was made responsible for is that as part of this, you will lead the work on a coordinated European approach to artificial intelligence. And to facilitate this, you will develop a European strategy on data. What's interesting about this bit of text is that you will probably be familiar that Breton was not the first choice of the French government to nominate as a commissioner. There was this lady whose name I forgot, unfortunately, but like there was a previous nominee who had to be taken out of the running because of some, like I believe it was some scandal about like the use of parliamentary resources or something. And but that person also already had gotten a mission letter from the commissioner before. This was a very last minute exchange of commissioners. And in that, this particular sentence was not contained, right? Like in this mission letter that the previous candidate had gotten was, it talked only about the European approach on artificial intelligence. It did not talk about the European strategy on data. And what this shows is, and I mean, this is also clear from how Commissioner Breton talks about this, and that this idea that there needs to be a specific data strategy and that data is like an important part of Europe's digital strategy is something that is essentially something that Breton brought into the Commission, right? Like this is something that is an issue that apparently he personally considers very important, that he thought like is important to make his like it's an important contribution which he brings to the commission, and so it's something that he very strongly believes in, and that was not necessarily part of the current program. So it's a bit of a latecomer. It's something that is but clearly important to the commissioner, and it is something that the commission has been working on ever since, right? Like there is a separate strategy document that was published in 2020, which is the EU data strategy. And this strategy document basically outlines a number of legislative interventions into the place of data. The two most prominent ones, there's five of them, are the Data Governance Act and the Data Act. And I'll come back to these two. But what underpins this data strategy is really this belief that that has been at various occasions expressed by Mr. Breton, that Europe to some degree has sort of lost or failed to take leadership in the development of the digital environment where it comes to digital platforms, to the platformization, to things where mainly where the big companies who dominate this space are generally American companies or Chinese companies, and that for Europe to take leadership, or the opportunity for Europe to take leadership, is in the field of working with data, of making data productive for European industry primarily. And the idea there is that Europe has, or the analysis there that comes from Breton and his unit, is that Europe has a very sort of, not necessarily fragmented, but the strength of European industry is a lot of mid-sized and smaller companies. And that in order for Europe to lead on data as an ingredient for industrial development and for a strong economy, like, there is a need to bring these data, to make this data available, to pool this data, and to give European companies a data advantage, if you will. So this is the very central idea of underpinning. So the European data strategy is, in essence, in the first place, a industrial strategy. It is part of the European Commission's broader digital strategy, which makes a very strong connection also, and which very much declares that anything Europe does in the digital space needs to be values-based, etc. So, like, there is this fusion that is happening here between what is perceived on substance really as an industrial strategy: make data available for European industry, make Europe be the leader in the industrial application of data, that is infused in discussions about, obviously, where it comes in the direction of the use of personal data, also with very much like references to values, to democracy, transparency, etc. But let's not forget, when we're looking at this, this is an industrial strategy, right? And if you go into like these elements of the strategy, like the two things that we've been following relatively closely at Open Future are the Data Governance Act, which was the first legislative element of this European strategy for data, that was actually presented as a legislative proposal, and that has by now been adopted. It's been adopted in May. I think it appeared in the Journal of the European Union in June or July. So this is not something that we necessarily see any impacts, concrete impacts of, but it is something that is around. It's been like, if you compare this to the other big legislative files that the European Union is or has been working on in the digital field, like something that has received very little attention. As you will be aware, like, most of the attention in the European field of digital policy making has gone to the Digital Markets Act and the Digital Services Act, like, have been like relatively high profile legislative battles with a lot of sort of media coverage, and this Data Governance Act, which deals with, well, data governance, has not gotten a lot of media attention. It also has not been very controversial within the European institutions. So if you look at the proposal of the Data Governance Act and what was adopted in May, it has changed relatively little. Like, there have been no really substantial high-level political disagreements or disagreements between the member states how things should be approached. And so this has been relatively smooth sailing, which is probably also due to the fact that the Data Governance Act deals with relatively abstract technical things that are like a little bit of scaffolding, so if you will, for the data thing. So let me briefly point to what it does contains in that act. Like, the first part of the act essentially deals with a couple of refinements to the open data directive. So this is about rules for public sector bodies sharing data or making data available as open data. And there's a couple of additional considerations that have been sort of refined that will lead to a little bit more requirements on public sector bodies to make certain types of data available to the public as open data. So, which has generally been uncontroversial, fits into a longer trend that the EU with the Public Sector Information Directive and its follow up has generally put like a very strong legislative focus on requiring public sector institutions to share data with business or with the society. But like there is, again, like this is industrial strategy. There is the idea that data needs to be available for economic actors. I think it's a very strong driver in there. And then the Data Governance Act basically endorses two types of data, like data governance models. One are so-called data sharing platforms, data intermediaries. So it comes with lots of requirements that mainly lie in the field of structural separation and not using data for their own benefit for entities that on a commercial basis operate as data sharing platforms, so go in between entities making data available, pooling them and then making them available to others. It tries to put like these restrictions of structural separation in there. It also puts into quite a lot of like transparency and reporting obligations in there. And then on a similar vein, it also introduces the idea, and again, of what's called recognized altruism organizations. So it puts also a framework in place where individuals or legal entities can share data for, you could say, public interest purposes. It's for example, research purposes. They call these data altruism users. Again, a sort of scaffolding for entities that take up this role that comes with reporting obligations and transparency obligations. So in itself, like this Data Governance Act does not do a lot does not interfere in substantial sort of data flows in a way. It, with the exception of this first part, which deals with public sector information, it does create mechanisms and requirements for entities engaging in sort of data intermediary functions, right? It's really hard to predict how much of an impact it will have. Like it's been in place right now, but it obviously is in place for too short of a time to see any impact here. The second thing, and this is potentially something which will be a bit more controversial in this European data strategy, is the Data Act itself, which is again like a regulation proposed by the Commission. The proposal has been presented in February of this year. It is now slowly taking up in both in the Council and in the European Parliament are forming their positions. So this is shaping up to be like a legislative discussion, which will probably be for a while with us. We're still waiting for the first sort of report from the European Parliament to see what's going in there. And this data, like what the Parliament thinks and how controversial things will be. In terms of substance, the Data Act is a legislative instrument that tries to do quite a lot of different things. So it's a bit of various things put into one. Probably the most the biggest part and potentially the most controversial part is that it tries to establish rules for access to data of connected devices, so Internet of Things devices. Sort of the problem that presents itself there is that with increasing use of Internet of Things devices, and this can range from devices that are owned by individual persons, like think a fitness tracker or like, I don't know, like an internet connected webcam or things like this to really like big industrial installations, is that there's currently sort of a unclear legal status, like about the ownership or the control over, is probably the better term, of the data generated by these things. Often, like, it puts the producers of these devices in a position to, via terms of conditions, claim that they have exclusive ownership or can make exclusive use of the data generated by these devices. And this can be obviously problematic in both the personal settings, but definitely also in industrial settings. The sort of the standard example here is the internet connected farming equipment, a tractor, which is operated by farmers. During its operation, generates lots of data about kind of like all things going on in the farming process. But this data essentially goes to the manufacturer of the tractor and maybe gets sold back to farmers or gets sold back to other entities. And so what the Data Act here does, and which is something that is probably like a very welcome intervention, is that it says, like, it establishes a right of access to the data generated by internet of things devices or connected devices that are like an access right for the owners of these devices, right? Like, so as the owner of the tractor, I have a right to access all of the information that is generated by this tractor. And it goes further. It also gives not only the right of access to this, but it also gives the right to allow third parties to access this on my behalf. So, like, here, the good example, for example, would be like an internet connected fridge, which breaks down. And so generally, you want to have this repaired, not necessarily by the manufacturer. But if the manufacturer is the only entity who has access to like all of the diagnostic data produced by that fridge, because fridges by now are also essentially computers, right? Like, it's very hard for independent repair shops to repair such a device. But there's this idea that as a consumer who owns this device, like, I can mandate the repair shop in order to carry out the repair of this. So this is one. This is one big part of the Data Act, where the Data Act actually intervenes to kind of like incentive flow of data and tries to create a more level playing field. This again obviously is and keep in mind that this applies to both industrial uses of data and also personal uses of data. It goes further. It has a number of other things, like it has includes provisions about like contractual arrangements between when it comes to data, where it tries to balance the field a little bit more. And then it has a section which is chapter 5, which from our perspective is maybe the most interesting part, where it introduces rules for what's called business to government data sharing. So this is, if you like, people have called this in the past reverse PSI. So it's this idea where PSI is public sector sharing information or sharing data with industry or with society at large. The business to government data sharing provisions in the Data Act in Chapter 5 of the data are the opposite. So under which conditions can there be requirements on commercial holders of data to share, make data available to government entities? What it does here, which is obviously from a societal perspective, a very interesting thing, because like if we assume it as a given that in order to make any sort of useful policy, in order to intervene in like complex societal issues or something, you are increasingly reliant on having data, then the fact that a lot of data is held by, that all the data that is held by the government needs to be made available more or less to the private sector as a result of the public sector information regulation. But at this time, there is no obligation for private sector entities to provide data to government, creates a imbalance and weakens the position of public sector institution, government entities, and maybe like also civil society as large to intervene in meaningful discussions, because they are permanently at a data advantage. Like, I mean, there's many examples of regulatory discussions also on the European level, where essentially regulators are lack access to the data that is available about the policy questions that they try to deal, because it's in the hand of private parties, and private parties do not share this. So this idea of reverse PSI, or public or business to government data sharing, is something that has been like discussed as an idea on the European level at least for a decade. There's a number of expert groups and reports, etc. And what is ended up in the Data Act is, from that perspective, a disappointingly narrow approach to this entire question, because what the Data Act essentially says, you can only use these business to government data sharing arrangements can only be used in emergency situations or in exceptional situations. So it's actually called, the category is exceptional need, and that is then split up into different things, like where it's on the one side responding to emergencies, and on the other side there's exceptional situations where public sector bodies can justify, like have to justify, that they need access to data from government. We think that this is a sort of very dangerous approach to this, because it essentially established this this idea that the government or public sector or civil society at large, researchers, should have access to data only in very exceptional situations, right? That basically establishes a sort of normative approach to this, where it's like data is like privately held data. Is none of the government's business. If you think about policymaking in areas wide-ranging, from environmental policymaking, responding to health emergencies, et cetera, it's clear that governments and other public sector entities with a public sector mission need access to data in order to function in this data-driven environment. So this is something that we've been focusing on in the Data Act a lot. And this is, I'll come back to that in a second, in a little bit more detail. I just want to mention, there's a number of other parts of the Data Act that interfere in places like the interoperability of cloud sharing providers, some interoperability provisions for what the European Commission calls a common European data spaces. So there's a number of other smallish interventions. From our perspective, like, this question is, and how far should society have access to data is the most interesting, and that crystallizes on Chapter 5 of the Data Act. I think I'm running a little bit, it threatens a little bit that I will run over time. So just briefly talk about common European data spaces. Another important part of the data strategy is the creation of what the Commission calls common European data spaces, which is still a bit of a nebulous concept. The first, and they want to put 14 European common data spaces. The idea is in these data spaces, players who are active in this space exchange data in some way. And this is again like harking back to this initial idea, thought, approach that Breton brought in and said, like, we really need to make sure, we need to enable the sharing between between individual industrial holders of data in order to create this European data advantage and to be able to lead on data as the European Union. The first approach here is a regulation for the European health data space that was presented in May of this year, that's currently also like starting to make its way through the European institutions, which I'll come back to it in a little bit. But the takeaway here is that they have quite an ambitious idea about creating these common European data spaces. It remains a little bit of a vague concept. The relationship between these European common data spaces and the Data Act is probably that the Data Act will establish like a set of horizontal basic rules, and that the EHD or that regulation, like the EHDS regulation, is then specific for certain data spaces and probably takes precedence over such things. So how does this connect with the idea of building a data commons, right? Like, which is what is really like our interest in this, and which is why we engage with a fairly technical regulation like the European the Data Governance Act and the Data Act. So what do we mean why do we need to build the data commons, right? Like, from our perspective, the rationale for having something like a data commons for building the data commons is that it is essential, it's quite a essential societal question, who can access data and use it for what purposes, right? Like, and as I mentioned, like we're trying to end up in a situation, or the trend is very much going in a situation where the idea is that data needs to be as much as possible available to industry, to the economy, and on the other side, like data from private actors can only be used in very exceptional cases for public interest users, for the public good, if you will. And so from our perspective, this imbalance is problematic. It will undermine the power of the public sector to shape policy. And so this is a very important question here. Our aim in this field must be to develop sustainable information ecosystems that shift this power balance and control over data back to societies. So like a stronger focus for public interest users of all the data that's generated around us. Think about like access to like emissions data for combating climate change, assessing like the possibility of interventions there, etc. And we are increasingly convinced that this can be achieved through democratic management of data as a commons, and not necessarily through allocating exclusive ownership rights and like basically privileging commercial actors of pooling data together, using that only for their own purposes and not sharing them with society. So from our perspective, a data commons like needs to rest, or building data commons needs to rest on three design pillars. And these are stewarding access. So this is achieved by setting clear rules for managing who gets access, under which conditions access is provided, while also to some degree preserving rights of those who bring data into the commons. Then forms of collective governance, ensuring through participation and democratic oversight of a trusted community. This obviously makes quite a bit of a difference on which level you are operating. So if this really is a European data commons, this will look different than if this is like a more sectoral or more regional specific thing. But we think there need to be collective governance structures, and this needs to include like sort of non-state, like both state actors, non-state actors from civil society, and there needs to be democratic processes of representation involved here. And then the North Star, if you will, for designing these things designing this approach to, is like really creating public value. So seeing data as something that by managing as a commons can create a public value, can be used for societally beneficial purposes, and that is something that's important to keep in mind when designing these processes, right? So how do we bring these like these new legislative approach that I've tried to outline very briefly, right? Like this is there's so much more detail there. And these ideas that we have about designing data commons together, the one place where we chose to intervene in the regulatory process at the moment is the Chapter 5 of the Data Act, which deals with this question of business to government data sharing. And as I've explained previously, like where we think like really like the approach is dangerously narrow. like if the Data Act gets adopted as it gets like as it is right now, as it is shaped right now, it will basically, as one of its consequences, I'm not sure if that's intended or unintended, establish this idea that sharing data from business to society is like an exceptional thing that needs to be treated very, very careful, and that essentially like puts strong normative limits around that. And that is really something that we're trying to counter. How do we try to counter this? So we've recently before the summer published like a policy brief that outlines a different model, like, and I encourage you to take a look at the policy brief if you are interested. But essentially, instead of saying like this is like something which can only this can only happen in exceptional cases, and like part of this approach, this exceptional approach is also like, for example, that the current text of the Data Act requires public bodies who receive data to then destroy it after they have used it, right? We think like we have a more structural approach to business to government data sharing that is structures around this idea of a public interest motivation. And if it's in a public interest, like this data should not be shared with like individual public sector entities, but rather with something that we call a European public data commons body. So there would be an entity that manages data that has been shared for public interest purposes, aggregates this data and makes this not available as open data necessarily, but makes it available to entities like who request access to this data for using this data for public interest purposes. You can like you can take a look at this model that we've developed in our policy brief, which is available on our website. There's many details in there that isn't like, what we're currently trying to do with this is like we're essentially also like working with members of the European Parliament trying to basically get them so far that they'll propose changes to the Data Act that would implement this scenario. This is a fairly sort of long shot in a way, because it like substantially tries to change a mechanism that has been proposed by the Commission, which is always very, very difficult to get achieved. It's also not something that's very high on the agenda of many people. There's relative few people who, from a civil society perspective, from a public interest perspective, interact with the the Data Act. Interesting to see is maybe some of our strongest allies here are municipalities. So we see a lot of municipal actors in this space who have a very strong interest in having data that's generated by use of public space in cities, by use of like urban systems that are operated by private operators, to make this available to the municipalities for policymaking purposes. Think things like transportation services like Uber, or rental services like Airbnb, or sort of even like other types of industries who outfit, like who deliver certain sensor systems to cities. Like, so we see a very strong kind of like interest on that level of the public sector to also shape this in a direction where this becomes a more structural mechanism that cannot only be applied in emergency or exceptional situations, right? I want to close with maybe the question that currently bothers me most. So we've chosen this approach where we say like, okay, we want to improve that particular part of the Data Act proposal for the better. Like, we need to avoid a situation where the idea that data that is like held by private entities can only be shared with society in exceptional situations. Therefore, we basically engage with the Data Act on a very like on a very like sentence to sentence level at the moment. On the other hand, like, I think there are also very legitimate doubts if something like this EU data strategy, which is highly descriptive in sort of how the Commission thinks the European data economy or data flows in European society should work, can actually work. So there's a high level of like, we build a system and then like society will behave according to this system in there, which makes me at times like very, very skeptical that whatever is on the drawing table there and whatever they will come up with will actually work, because like it is a pretty questionable idea that you can design these systems and then reality will follow, right? Like, and remember, there is a lot of like at the basis of this, there is essentially like a level of, or a good amount of wishful thinking or hope in there that if we come up with good rules, then Europe will become the champion of the data economy. Right, like that's the goal, and the question is if you can legislate something like this in place, and so this raises for us also questions about in how far does it make sense to interfere here in this field and in this legislative processes. Isn't this something like that might do more harm than good in the end? Like, I think our current answer to this is still like, if we look at the Data Act and if we see this being adopted as it is, we think it will definitely do more harm than good. If it will do good is another question, because if all of these complicated structures that are envisaged there will actually work is a open question that will probably not be answered for like at least another 5 years or something. So I maybe leave you with this open question, but I'm happy to take questions or comments on everything that I've said so far. And now I hope you're all still there because I didn't see you for a while.
Thank you very much, Paul. This was really, really interesting. At least for me, because the European legislation is something I'm not really into, and it was really clear, and the description and the question you pose are really clear. If there are people in the public that want to ask questions, please do. There is Fabien who say he has so many questions because he's doing his PhD research on this topic. But he have to go, so he will send you the questions by mail.
I can also maybe briefly mention that like you are organizing this event next Saturday in Paris. Like, I don't know if that's a public thing, but I'll be also in Paris for the next weekend and maybe see some of you there. Yeah. Also, great. An opportunity to ask questions in person. But
Perfect. So if there is somebody who have questions, please do. I have some, so I can start maybe with. You ask a lot of questions about whether theoric, I have questions about the theories of your propositions, mm-hmm. and then about your political strategy, because the last question you ask, it's about whether the energy you put on the advocacy you are doing is worth it or not. For the first one, I was wondering, can you describe a bit more what you think about the what you called European Data Commons body, you know, for the governance, how exactly it works? Because I agree with you that stewarding access, collective governance, and public value are three good design pillars. But can you give us an example? If maybe we take a city, where I'm not sure the European legislation is the right thing to do for the cities, but can you give us an example about how this kind of body would work? Because if we take, for example, the health sector, who would be part of that body, and would it be all like how it? What is your way you describe those bodies and the governance that have to be done there? And the second question was more about the strategy, and to understand just a little bit who are your allies inside the European administrations. You talked about the parliament, so people that were elected, but do you have connections with people that are in the European Commission that write the different laws, or are you know who they are, you know if they are with us or against us? Like, how do you lead the advocacy in this like opaque or really complex institutions?
Yeah, thank you. Both of them are like good questions, and I can kind of talk probably a while. I'll answer them sort of maybe in the order you asked them, right? Like, so this first one, obviously, you will need to look into like how you structure governance structures. Like, it's fairly, I don't want to say easy, but like it's something to sort of write principles on paper where you say, like, okay, a governance structure ought to look like this. But like, to be very precise, for example, so when we published this sort of a policy brief, which says like, here's a better model, right? Like, which is, and you can still be like, you can still be fairly abstract, right? Like, you put like this, as you saw on the slide, you put like a nice yellow highlighted square in there and call that the European Data Commons body, and you'll get away with that when you're presenting this thing. But like, now the next step after this was we actually talked to people, and they said like, this is interesting, but how would this look like in the context of kind of like what's discussed in the European Parliament or in all of the European, like, so this proposal for the Data Act, right? And then you start thinking, and you're essentially limited very much by also what can be done in terms of European legislation. What existing entities are there? Like, so the literally one of the things that presented ourselves was like, okay, can you write in the Data Act something like, the European Union shall set up a European Data Commons body that functions like this? Probably not, right? Like, usually, like legislative or regulatory interventions like the Data Act do not necessarily establish new organizations. They usually require member states to put something like to set something up, or on the other side, they assign certain tasks to pre-existing things. So like, we've did like a, actually we did a quick scan and come out like, if you look at like the institutions that exist on the level of the European Union, we came to the conclusion the most likely one which could be entrusted with something like running a data commons body is actually the public office of the Commission of the European Union, like, which does already like which actually has as a mission to providing high quality information for all of the institutions of the European Union. So we said like, okay, like the European Public Data Commons body should be entrusted with this organization, and then you put in a bit of language around like that it should be governed by a oversight, like that function should be governed by an oversight board, and then you name relatively abstract stakeholders, right? Like, where you say like, okay, this need to be people from civil society, from the research committee, from the national statistical offices, from I don't know, like, I don't have the text for us, but like we'll come. So in the end, it is also not like ideal institution building, but it is this sort of kind of like bringing this down to like, you need to attach to some, like, often like for something to give it the possibility of actually making a chance of being adopted, like, you need sort of like, often you need what's called hooks, like that something you stick it to something that's already existing makes it much easier than to dream up, or not dream up, but like to propose completely new structures, right? Like, and this obviously always entails like sort of compromise finding between sort of reality and like the more abstract ideas about like that can be, especially in the around questions of governance, also like obviously like very very theoretic in many discussions. But I hope this gives you, like, there's a similar similar thing. And if you're interested in this, we've also, and I've been a little bit less involved in that. And for that reason, like, I hesitate a little bit to talk about, like, there's also a submission that we provided in response to the presentation of the proposal for this regulation on the European health data space that focuses, like, even to a stronger degree on the importance of democratic legitimization of a European health data body. Right? Like the one of the specific things about the health data regulation is that it does include these, like, it already includes such a body. And so, like, our comments, like, which we developed in that case together with a Polish think tank, are driven very much also by questions around, like creating trust in institutions and democratic legitimacy, right? Like, health data, obviously, also in countries like Poland, where reproductive health is something that's highly politicized, like, much more than most of the Western European members of the European Union, is something where what questions about in how far can we trust, like, any type of public institution with health data, like, is a sort of probably, like, just not entirely exaggerated saying, like, a life and death issue so I'll encourage you to also look into there, like, where we focus a little bit more on questions about democratic legitimacy. So that to your first question. The second question, which was about, like, how do we work with whom do we work, like, how does this work in practice, right? So generally, I said, like, you're not, there's sort of three co-legislators in the European process, right? Like, the European Commission, which proposes, like, which has the right of initiative, like, which proposes, like, things like these proposals, but generally, like, almost everything comes out of the European Commission. And then in almost all regular legislative processes, they need to get approval, or they get this adopted, endorsed, approved by both the European Parliament and the Council of Member States. On a very general level, like, it's always been more difficult for smallish civil society organizations, or for civil society as a whole, to work with the council. Council is a bit more like, in terms of traditions, like, it's to some degree like a diplomatic institution, right? Like, which represents state interests, where very much of the decisions are made in the capitals and then conveyed to essentially diplomats in Brussels, who then, like, negotiate about positions. That's been, like, always a very hard process for civil society institutions to get involved in, also, because if you want to do that, you basically need to have, like, a presence in, like, 27 member state capitals in order to implement. So that's hard, right? Like, European Parliament is a much more, like, accessible body, because it's Parliament, like, they are more receptive to, like, all kinds of stakeholders, and it's also more clearly sorted along the political spectrum. So you also have ideas based on sort of political color or ideology, who will be likely more receptive to you and who maybe not. And maybe you also have ideas, like, there are certain parts of the parliamentary spectrum you don't want to work, etc. And then you have the Commission. But the important thing is that the Commission will, like, a Commission proposal will always in itself already contains sort of like an assessment where they said, like, okay, we think we can get alignment on this from both the member states and the parliament. So, like, the Commission may think on an expert level that something is would actually be better in terms of substantive law, but it's not realistic to get this through. Like, if the Commission makes a proposal, like their number one mission is to get that proposal adopted, right? Like, if they propose something, like, in February of this year, they will see it as failure if this doesn't get adopted before the end of this commission. Like, they will see it as a success if they get adopted. So there is a lot of there's always a lot of kind of like pre-positioning in there, which seems to take political realities. And we know that that a lot of the expert bodies advising the European Commission, a lot of the internal discussions in the Commission were more ambitious on this area of business to government data sharing, which thought like, okay, we need to have a stronger intervention here, because like also the Commission like is interested in having data for its policy making, right? Like, but, and yes, we talk to them, but to some degree, like the Commission is a very strange entity, which once they made this proposal, they are also like saying, okay, this is our proposal. Like, we understand what you're saying, but like, this is our proposal. Like, we have proposed this, and they will not like, if you talk to them, they will always say like, okay, we're here to listen. Like, we're not here to, versus with like the people in the parliament and to a lesser degree, people in the member states, obviously you can have an exchange on the merits. And then in the, to come back to this issue and back to the European Parliament, if you will, clearly, like, sort of often from like in my entire career, it's been most of the sort of ideas that we went with to Brussels are usually like the parties on the left side of the political spectrum tend to be more receptive to these ideas, which is not surprisingly, like, if like your entire logic is to some degree like that we think like we need to look at societal benefits instead of like economic benefits, like that aligns you with a certain part of the political spectrum stronger or not. And then but you will not win anything by just having kind of like the left, like the left side of the political spectrum in your on your side, right? Like the majorities in the European Parliament like need to include like a big part of the center. So from that what we're seeing here is like really like one of our these discussions is like if you go to the Conservatives or something and then talk about like publish this in terms of the Commons and sort of like that is not necessarily a narrative which they even understand, right? Like that just doesn't necessarily connect with them. What we see some and I said like this is a very long shot, like what we're trying to do here, right? Like but where we see some kind of like of our arguments resonating is where you talk to lawmakers about the fact that they are by making access to data for themselves sort of exceptional, they are sort of like impairing their own capacity to act and do their job, like is something that resonates a little bit broader across the political spectrum, right? Like, so you also need to package things in a way and figure out like you can tell the proposal and present that in very many different ways, and like you sort of part of the game, if you will, is to figure like also figure out like how you need to present something in order to make it palpable to the biggest part of the political spectrum without necessarily like adjusting the proposal. I hope this sort of like answers some of your questions here.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. Maybe Melanie or Pierre have maybe a question.
Maybe Monique has a question, or I'm going to go last.
I don't understand what you said, sorry.
Has a question. I'm happy to go last.
Okay, you want to go last, but maybe you want to go first.
Hello, thanks for all the explanation. My question is on the, I'm very interested on the platform of data sharing, because I wondered to what extent it could be a legal tool to enforce a real collective governance of personal data. So I would like to know what do you think about it? Do you know if there is already such platform and that actually exists and how it works? And if you know more about the safeguards that exist to ensure that this is not just tool to give credit and grant to massive data utilization and really respect the choices of the people that are in this cooperative.
So not like, I think you asked about the data altruism organization, right? Like, did I get this correct? Yeah.
Yeah, it's cooperative of data, I think, in the
government. So, I mean, so maybe in the context of personal data, and like, I think I did not really fully like, so what's also specific about these two legislative interventions that I talked about is that they operate, if you will, on all types of data, right? Like, they are, if you will, data agnostic. So they apply to personal data and to non-personal data. They don't necessarily make a difference between these two categories. So there's not specific rules, by which I mean there's not specific rules for dealing with personal data that are different for rules for dealing with non-personal data. They assume that they build on things like the GDPR when it comes to personal data, right? Like, so these rules come on top of it, and the data protection, the data for the largest part, like the questions around the protection of personal data are basically said, like, they are already covered in the GDPR, right? Like, so which manifests itself, if you go into the code, like in the legal code of these things, manifests itself by lots of clauses that without precedence and or like explicitly pointing to certain things there. This is probably also the only way you can further intervene here, because like this idea of making a distinction between personal data and non-personal data is incredibly hard. Like, right, like there's so many categories of data that fall somewhere in between that you can see as personal data in some contexts and non-personal data. Like, I mean, take the example of the kind of like the data generated by the tractor that the farmer operates, like, is to some degree, like, obviously, like, probably soil data and lots of things about the health of the plants and the efficiency of his farming operation, but like they are also geocoded, and it tells you where the farmer has been at a certain point of time, right? Because like it tells you where the tractor has been. So like these things are like these things are incredibly complex. I think the Commission is very well aware of these and like has built in certain safeguards in the Data Act, where it also comes to like, and one of the very interesting things in the Data Act, like that I is in terms of legislative technique super interesting here, is these access rights that I talked at the beginning. So where it's about access rights to IoT devices, right? Like to connected devices, to some degree, like it actually explicitly excludes like the very largest platforms from having these access rights. Like, so you can transfer your data, you can authorize third parties to access your data of your fridge, but you cannot do that within entities who are like very large platforms in the, like, forget if it's the DSA or the DMA, but like the gatekeeper platforms that are defined in the DMA are explicitly excluded from this. So this is like, there is, at least in the Commission's thinking, if this is watertight is another thing, but like there is ideas about sort of like using these things to level the playing field. There's certain protections like that explicitly, for example, also ban the use of this type of data for things like tracking and individual profiling, etc. I believe, like, I had a little bit of trouble understanding you before, Zerline, like that you like also asked like in how far this data altruism organizations like work as a sort of it can be something. These are this is a voluntary mechanism. Right, like, and there is the idea, like, if we, like, we know, or the assumption is, people sometimes, like, for example, in order to facilitate something like medical research, people are often interested in sharing very sensitive personal information, because like they think of personal data where they think like it's actually beneficial for finding cures for a certain thing, or it can contribute to helping medical process. And so this Delta Altruism organizations, like, I think they try to build like a more trustworthy infrastructure for these things. Like, I think it's an attempt to say, like, we know there is a incentive of people to share data, and we want to channel this into situations where there is some level of transparency and protection around this, where this can be like where you can like trying to build structures that are not easily captured, where like something like one scenario this is clearly like has in mind is, for example, this thing where like somebody sets up a sort of like in name for the public interest or for a specific like research interest entity that amasses a lot of data and then does a pivot and like takes that as a company private or like develops something with it else. So these kind of protection mechanisms are in there. And again, like, it raises these kind of questions if this will, and there's a lot of regulatory, like there's a lot of reporting and transparency obligations on these. So like, it does not look to me like as the most attractive structure for people to create, because like, if you say you're a data altruism organization, like there's a yearly reporting obligation, lots of things around. So it can be like, these are not like these are interesting structures, and there's important thoughts about structural separation, like etc. And there's protections in there. If they will work, we will see, right? Like, but like, especially this data altruism thing, and this also plays into these data intermediaries that are part of the earlier thing. It connects to these ideas that a lot of people have, like, I'm not sure if you are familiar with the My Data movement, about kind of like this personal data management and like more personal agency over how you got like that you actively manage your data. Like, this, it sort of lays the groundwork, builds the strategy, the scaffolding for strategies for this to work. I hope this answered your question. Like, I had, again, like, it was not 100% coming through.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think you were also asking about the existing platform cooperatives that exist already, where people actually share their data and manage them, in a democratic way. Like, does our, it exists, like, do we have a lot of big platforms where people share the data in a cooperative way?
It's hard to say. Like, I think it's something that there's a lot of experimentation in this space. Like, it is my there's a lot of interest in this space. It is very hard to get it's a very dynamic space, so it's very hard to get an overview over this. For existing things, like, it is to some degree, like, I've always thought, like, this the idea is that you put these data altruism organizations in place, and they, because they comply with these requirements of the European legislation, they are trusted more, right? Like, and so this departs in a way from an analysis which says, like, the main kind of like obstacle to having more or better functioning of these kind of like arrangements is a lack of trust. If that analysis is correct, like, right, like, and if this regulation like is able to confer enough through kind of like all of these regulation and reporting obligations, confer more trust on these entities, this will work. The question is, for me, one of the questions here in this space is not like I'm doubtful that it's a question of trust. Like, I'm my gut feel, like, and this is sort of really on the level of gut feeling, is that a lot of like that we can, like, people active in this space can imagine like a lot of like complicated and very well thought out things, but like that in the end, like, there's a very limited amount of people in who are actually interested in actively managing their data. That's just like, people struggle with a lot of things, like, like people struggle with like managing them, like a lot of people like struggling have insight in their money, which still is something which is sort of like people, and that you suddenly have like large parts of the populations also like starting to think about managing their data is maybe like quite a high expectation. That's absolutely. We will see like if that's really a realistic expectation, yeah. Right?
Melanie, maybe you can ask your question and maybe close also the discussion if you want.
Yes, thank you so much, Paul. This was really a great, rich presentation, and thank you also for the very generous answer to the question of Sebastian and Virginie. My question is more modest. I really like you. Like how there are these two strategies to reach our goal of openness, policy advocacy and the design of social and economic infrastructure. And in that case, it's important to use to choose use cases. And you suggested a few which could be the best. To demonstrate the feasibility and value for society of European commons. Mm. So it could be health, environment, or farming tractors, or city. You mentioned municipalities, maybe some public transportation sector. Do you have another example, or maybe within the health sector, which is huge and sensitive, there are so many health sector commons which could be developed. So from productive health, which is no, to I mean our heart rate run with. Connected watches. What's your gut feeling?
So I have in the health space, like I've not really been working, so like I don't really have a lot of examples. Like this is more on the level of speculation, but like so I can give you an hard example where I think like this idea about policy making, right? Like as you know, and you will be familiar with, like I've spent like part of like the last 5 years or something on the EU copyright reform, right? Like, and on sort of first advocating against this idea of upload filters in Article 17 context, and then quite strongly engaging with the Commission and other stakeholders in what was called the stakeholder dialogue to actually figure out how on earth this is supposed to work. And seeing in that process that the very people, like the very policymakers who proposed this extremely controversial regulation, actually had no idea how this sector functions, like, right, like who were like, because they did not have like data on sort of the prevalence of copyright infringement or supposedly copyright infringement on these platforms. They had no data on the performance of these copyright filtering systems. Like they were all going by like basically what self-interest stakeholders were telling them. And they made a huge big, like, again, it was clear that they had never had this data in this entire process, and they didn't get access to this process, right? Like even Article 17.10 at the end says, like, for the purposes of the stakeholder dialogues, the platforms shall share data on the thing. They were helpless, right? Like the commission officials were basically and the situation, these European Commission organized stakeholder meetings where you had essentially the commission arranging this meeting with the intent of like figuring out how this can go. And then there is people from Universal Music saying like, this is like this, and we're sure about this. And then somebody from Google stands up and says, no, it's the other way around. Like, and they're both pointing to each other and saying, but we can't, like, and they both know how it is, right? Like, and they both point to each other and say, but we have non-disclosure agreements and we can't talk about it. Like both of them with each other. Right, like, and they are blocking them, and so this for me is like a very very good example of this thing. Like, you're going into a hugely contested policy space, you're making decisions where you move that thing one way or the other, and you're doing this on not having access to the data. And we need to come to a situation where policymakers can't operate in complete darkness. And right, like, the more of the economy is data driven, or the more of society is data driven, like, access to this data is like a prerequisite in order to be able to like make informed decisions. And that is currently, and this is not something like that's exceptional cases. Like, there should be there should be like, sort of take again this environment, like, for me it's the best thing, like, environment, and like, we're in deep shit with like climate change, right? Like, and sort of obviously, like, all of the manufacturing industry has lots of emissions data, like, because they need to know how their system, like, how their fabrication processes operate, like, but this is not something that is like, this should be like fully available in real time to kind of like policymakers trying to figure out how we can get out of this crisis, right? Like, but no, it's like industrial data that's guarded as trade secrets, and like policymakers are left standing in the rain. And that is sort of like this mind shift that we need to get. Yes, like, so I stepped away a little bit from your questions to about health data, because like, I'm like, I have less experience in this space, but like, there is obviously like a way where sort of kind of like how our health systems, like, which are at least in the European context, like entirely publicly, or not entirely publicly funded, but like for the biggest part publicly funded, which means like a lot of like a lot of the commercial activity that the pharmaceutical companies, et cetera, undertake is like downstream from public funding. But like, there is no equivalent to this downstream from public funding of like some upstream sharing of data, or like only in exceptional cases. And that is not like how you build sustainable societal systems, we would argue.
Yes, one of the books of Marina Mazzucato underlined that the state is completely funding a lot of private institution, which feeds the discourse on power imbalance. So you underlined during your presentation on the fact that public and citizen are contributing to private, and it's time to fill the gap and see how private can also contribute data to public and civil
and society. It's like, I find this like very interesting that this emerges like the closest in these kind of like situations around like where municipalities struggle with like sort of things like micromobility services, right? Like, and you clearly see that there's places who have this sort of better under control and less under control, but like it's very obvious that this is something about, yes, there's a new type of largely data-driven like economic activity which takes place in public space, which has negative externalities for that public space, and the obviously like having data and understanding these processes is part of finding good solutions to them. And that becomes a very acute thing for city governments in order to maintain control over what's expected from them from running a city, right? Like, and they cannot do this without data. That's been like, I mean, we've been like talk to people in city governments around mobility, and this is a recurring thing. And like we need to be in control, like. The design of our public spaces must be like a societal responsibility, and that it cannot be left like just to private industry to operate in there and like take all the benefits and don't account for any of the externalities.
Thanks a lot, Paul. Thanks, Melanie, for the question, and Paul for the answer. I think we fully agree with you, and that we cannot let those kind of decisions to the private sector alone. and that data is essential for taking those public decisions, so data should be common for a common decision, I guess. It's 12:30, so we're right on time. Thank you very much, Paul, for the presentation. Thanks, Melanie. We met next week, so I'm glad because we exchange a lot on Visio, but I'm glad that we can meet in person. Yeah. Thanks, Pierre, also for your comment. And the recording will be online, I guess, in 2 or 3 weeks, so we can share it more broadly for the person who cannot attend to this meeting. Thanks a lot, Paul, and thanks everybody, and have a good day.